This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, general manager of Tabor Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Hello, everyone. Today is Thursday, June 25th, and this is HPC Wire Soundbite, coming to you again on location at the International Supercomputing Conference in Hamburg, Germany. I'm Addison Snell, general manager of Tabor Research, joined as usual by Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire. Good evening, Michael.
Good evening, Addison.
Michael, it's Thursday night here in Hamburg, and although there are a few sessions still open tomorrow, the conference exhibition just closed about an hour ago, and you and I have been very busy independently covering the event. Today on our podcast, we're going to be discussing some of the winners and losers from this year's show, according to our different perspectives. But first, this was ISC's first year in Hamburg, and what did you think of the conference overall this year?
You know, I thought it was a great venue. I like the city. It's got a good vibe. And the venue here is great. They had a lot of exhibitors. I think they had 120 exhibitors this year, which is a record. They had something like 1,700 attendees, which is also a record. I think they were at 1,300 last year. So this was feeling more like a big conference than I think it's ever felt before. It had a nice vibe. There was a lot of energy here this year, which was a little bit surprising considering sort of the economic turmoil we've gone over the past 12 months. So it was sort of exciting to be here. It was like there was no financial crisis ever went on. It was kind of cool.
Michael, we've been maintaining overall that there's still a lot of activity going on in HPC, and yeah, we have seen some slowdown in purchase cycles, especially in the commercial sector, but I think this is a real validation that there is energy in HPC still. You're right, it was a good venue. It was fun to be in this area of Hamburg with the nice Planten und Blumen gardens outside that half of us had to walk through to get to our various hotels, but it was a nice city. If you could figure out how to walk on the sidewalk without getting run over by a bicycle, then you'd solve the city. And it was a joy to attend. I think there was a lot of energy around it. It's definitely a bigger venue. Some of the outer meeting rooms started to get it feeling like they were farther away from the show floor again, almost like a supercomputing. But once you got onto the show floor, it had that great intimate feel of an ISC conference where everybody who's here is someone who you wanted to talk to.
Exactly right. You know, they're going to be here for another, I think, couple years, I think at least, and they've got room to grow. I mean, this venue is as big, it could handle SC, I think, and so they can grow as large as they want, if they want, and I think they will grow over the next couple of years, so this is a good spot for them. I know they're starting to consider even other places. There's rumors even they might go outside of Germany at some point, but right now, Hamburg's the place, and I think they picked a good spot. So, like you said, we were both sort of on different paths in this conference this year. Let me ask you first, what did you see at the conference that you really liked this year? And then what didn't you like? What did you see that you didn't like?
Well, I think starting off on the categories of winners and losers coming into the show, you know, Michael, on our previous podcast, we'd covered the launches of the Nehalem processors and of the Istanbul processors from AMD, and we discussed how AMD had a real opportunity to gain ground on Intel because there's so little loyalty to the processor vendor, and it just goes by price performance, and you never know who's going to come out on top until you see the chip. And I've got to say, from attending this conference, the momentum around Nehalem was just outstanding. Intel really killed it. Intel came off looking fantastic during this show, and everyone was talking about the Nehalem processors. People were demoing the Nehalem processors, and I don't think I heard the word Istanbul once all through the conference, which you know, maybe I just missed it, but it kind of, in my mind, left AMD looking like a relative loser for the conference just for not capitalizing on their recent processor launch.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Beth. I did hear the word Istanbul. I actually visited the AMD booth, and it wasn't.
Well, you'll probably hear it there. Sure, I do. Probably hear them talk about it in the AMD booth. I guess a good point. But go ahead.
And there was there was a cool little demo there. They were demoing their beta version of OpenCL, which is their new standard language framework geared towards parallel processing, which is geared towards GPUs, but also multi-core CPUs. And actually what they were demoing there was a four-processor Istanbul box with a GPU in it as well, but they were actually running OpenCL on the Istanbul CPU, so it was like a 24-core demo of OpenCL, and it was kind of interesting. Now, all these things are in beta, OpenCL, for both their CPU platform and their GPU Firestream platform is in beta, but they're going to be out pretty soon, maybe by the end of this year, maybe even sooner. And that's going to be a big thing, especially for AMD's Firestream GPU business. They're running behind NVIDIA, which already has CUDA, and they don't really have a software solution. So that'll be big news for them. I did hear Istanbul at one other place, and I'll get to that in a minute, but let me just turn it back to you.
Well, I take your point, Michael, that AMD was running interesting demos around Firestream, but not to be argumentative, but you can't possibly claim that AMD had any kind of momentum around Firestream when compared with the amount of NVIDIA, Tesla, and CUDA that people were talking about all over the show floor. I mean, GPU computing was a hot topic, but I didn't hear anybody talking about it in the context of AMD or ATI or Firestream. I was hearing it in the context of NVIDIA or Tesla, and if anyone was looking forward to the future at all, it brought Larrabee into the discussion. So it was kind of just another dimension where AMD was kind of getting out-positioned by Intel and NVIDIA.
Yes, certainly you're right. NVIDIA owns the GPU computing market right now. I mean, Intel isn't in it. That's the future. And AMD is just trying to get in it. And it looks like that maybe they're building a little momentum. They had some announcements about the Firestream process being put into various platforms. But yeah, you're right. It's basically all NVIDIA now. I'm just, looking, and AMD's hoping that they're going to start to get traction soon. So.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about something from the show that you liked, Michael. What's something that stood out for you?
Well, I sort of was concentrating on the European vendors because we don't get to see them as much at SC in the U.S. So I caught a hold of two pretty interesting small vendors. Of course, there's Volvo, which is a big vendor, and we talked about them extensively over the last couple of weeks. But there were two vendors. One was T-Platforms. Came to the show for the first time, and they're a Russian company. They're building a very dense Nehalem blade-based system, and this is a petascale system on par with what basically Bull did with Bull X, their extreme computing solution, and it's just like that. It's purpose-built for HPC, and it's very dense, like the 42-rack system of Nehalem blades. It delivers about 18 teraflop. And it's a lot of, they design it themselves. Of course, they're using a lot of commodity components like everyone else, but it's the way it was described to me. It's like half MPP, half cluster. They've got some network smarts in it to do more synchronization. It's not just a wired together cluster, just QDR and InfiniBand, which is in there. They've got extra smarts in there. They've got an FPGA managing the network. And it's a pretty impressive system, and those guys are building a 500 teraflop system for Moscow State University, and that's going to be deployed by the end of next year, although I think the initial deployment is going in this year, and it's just a few hundred teraflops. So it sounds like they're sort of going great guns, and at least in Russia. They claim they have like 35% of the market there, which is more than either IBM or HP at this point. And this is their second blade architecture, and it looks pretty interesting. They might actually start edging out IBM and HP even more, and they're looking to maybe expand into Europe and certainly into the other CIS countries that used to be part of the USSR. They're trying to sell into those areas too. Now, the other company, Eurotech, is just a newcomer into HPC. They sold to other HPC vendors before, and then they were rebranded with those names. But now they've come out with their own brand. And again, it's a very dense Mahalem blade system, again, purpose-built for HPC, that can scale up to petascale. And again, it's very dense. They have a 42-rack system that they say is like, I think, 24 teraflops. Like, I think 42 will make a petaflop. And this thing's all liquid-cooled. The T-platforms one I was just talking about, that's air-cooled, and it's got these huge heat sinks on it. It's amazing to look at it. They pull out the blade, and it's the whole blade is covered in a heat sink. But the Eurotech version is water-cooled internally, so it's a little bit different, but just as dense, and it sort of beats anything out there as far as density and cooling. So it's all quite interesting, and these guys are selling to Europe well. I don't think there's any idea that they would go into the North American market, but it's very compelling technology. And now with sort of the bull extreme computing blades out there, that system, and then T-platforms and Eurotech, it's shaping up to be sort of an interesting market for petascale HPC in Europe. It's something to watch. And I just wanted to mention also one thing about BullX, the Bull systems. They aren't talking about this very much yet, but they're also going to come out with some SMP servers, I think, next year, based on the same technology they use for their blades. And these are like large SMP systems. They look like really big systems. They're saying 800 servers will give you a petaflop. So they must be pretty big, and I'm guessing they're using the Mahalem EX chips, the upcoming chips from Intel, which provides scalability up to 8 sockets and up to 8 cores per chip, and that's plenty of cores and sockets. So I'm thinking that'll probably get them to the kind of server size they're looking for. But so there's a lot of activity in Europe on building these big petascale systems. Unfortunately, the North American market is not going to be able to see very much of this, but there's going to be a lot of activity in Europe. So those are the things I liked. I mean, those were interesting companies, and I think they're going to continue to be interesting. I'm going to try and watch them as closely as I can from my vantage point in the U.S., but I think that's quite compelling stuff going on there.
Well, ISC is always a good chance to get back in touch with the European vendors that you don't get to see or hear from all the time, especially the smaller vendors. And you're right, in addition to the ones that you mentioned, I also had good meetings with European hardware and software companies like ClusterVision or CAPS Enterprise or Alinea or Streamline Computing. So, you get in touch with these European vendors, and it really helps paint a complementary picture of the important role that Europe plays in the HPC market. So that is an important reason to come to the show. What was something that disappointed you at the show?
Well, I guess, one of the sessions that I was really looking forward to was the cloud computing session, and that it was a good set of panelists. They had people there from HP and Microsoft and Sun and Hewlett Supercomputing Center, as well as Amazon, Google, and Yahoo. And they were trying to answer this question, cloud computing, HPC, synergy, and competition. Well, they were good speakers, but they really didn't get around to answering that question. And I guess this is sort of what happens when everybody starts talking about cloud. They all talk about it from their own point of view, and they start sort of talking about what they're offering and what their version is. And they didn't really get to what I would consider a meeting of the minds on how cloud computing was going to move into HPC. So it was a little bit disappointing. Everybody sort of had a good pitch. I sort of liked what the traditional HPC guys were saying, the HPs and the Suns and Microsoft. Dan Reed especially had a good take on it, saying that cloud computing in HPC is going to be more of a sociological challenge than a technological challenge. And he went on about that. I think he has sort of the right idea there, but there's still quite a bit of distance between what the HPC vendors and users are thinking that the cloud is going to do for them and what the traditional cloud providers are thinking, how they're going to get to there. There wasn't much overlap that I could see, and I'm actually going to write a short blog about it. But yeah, that was a little disappointing. But you're always a little disappointed by discussions of cloud computing, because again, it's one of these nebulous things that there's no easy answer to it right now, and it's a work in progress, especially for the HPC crowd.
It sounds like there may have been more practical cloud messaging actually going on the show floor than there was in that session. I will say about the title of that session that I was even confused by the question that was raised in terms of whether or not cloud computing is competing against HPC. It didn't really seem like a well-formed question.
question for me, in the sense that HPC is a category of applications that exist that can be run, that, you know, we collectively call this market high performance computing. And while cloud certainly exists within high performance computing, I think of cloud as being not a collection of applications, more as but rather more as an access model, or a way that people can access resources, a way that applications can be run. So to me, asking whether cloud computing competes with HPC is kind of like analogous to saying, does a supermarket compete with bread? A supermarket is one way that you can access bread, and you could argue that more supermarkets means that more people can get to bread, but I don't see how cloud computing competes with HPC. But out on the show floor, there was some real cloud computing news. Altair and Platform both had press releases about private or hybrid cloud management software. So even just on the software middleware side, beyond the system vendors, there were some interesting cloud announcements.
Yeah, I think a lot of the vendors are thinking about cloud, and everybody was talking about it. I think in that particular session, as far as asking that question, synergy or competition, they're talking about not HPC as an application set, but HPC as an infrastructure, a traditional infrastructure. So they're saying HPC infrastructure as we know it today, is that going to compete with, you know, moving that infrastructure to the cloud? I think that's what was meant. I think that's what wasn't really answered. Although, I will say Thomas Lippert, the head of Jülich, he was probably the biggest skeptic on this. And from his vantage point, high up atop the petascale systems, I mean, he was very much of a skeptic, and he thinks cloud computing will not move into that area. It's so specialized, all this leadership, cutting-edge supercomputing is not a good match for the cloud model. And I think he's essentially right, at least the way leadership supercomputing is done today. It's basically like telling these people, it's like telling Formula One racers to take the bus. It's just efficiency is not the driving force here. It's all high-level stuff. It's very customized stuff. So that might be the last bastion of true HPC infrastructure that will live on for quite a while. But I think there's still going to be some controversy on how much really HPC will move into the cloud, and how much will be left as sort of this traditional infrastructure that we're used to today. And I think that's the open question. And I think we'll have the answer in the next few years.
Clearly, we'll get to it in the next couple of years. I want to get back around to one other relative winner-loser category in the show. Is it was overwhelming to me how much InfiniBand there was, not only in things like the top 500 list, which we discussed on Tuesday, but just on the show floor, it seemed like the number of InfiniBand demos, and particularly QDR InfiniBand demos, were all over the place, showing up with quad data rate switches, and also some high-density InfiniBand switches showing up in a couple of places. And that came off as a relative winner. And furthermore, it brought along with it, when you get to QDR and also some of these high-density switches, it's buoying again something we talked about last at supercomputing time frame in my post-show blog there, where we were starting to see optical interconnects really starting to take off. And I thought Finisar in particular had a very good show here in terms of their products and what they can bring to that InfiniBand space, covering slightly longer distances with their cables, being able to handle the performance of a QDR connection. So InfiniBand, together with optics in general, I thought had a pretty good show, and left Ethernet as in a relative losing position.
Yeah, I got to agree with you there. The Finisar offering was really interesting. They've got it's offering as much as 150 gigabits per second, so they're offering basically a 12X InfiniBand cable, actually above 12X. They can also handle proprietary, like, supercomputing networking as well. It's even better than 12x InfiniBand. They've got a real fine cable for some of these, especially switch-to-switch InfiniBand setups. And they think they came along at just the right time, just as QDR is hitting its stride. And it certainly is. I agree with you. It is a big show here. It's being looked at as the enabling technology of petascale systems. And every petascale architecture, you know, you see QDR InfiniBand. You see it on chip. You see double QDR on board now. You see these big modular switches. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. And you're right. There's not, except for Arista, there's not that much 10 gigabit Ethernet showing up right now. So,
well, there are a few Ethernet vendors here. Force 10 was here, but just in terms of what people were demoing on the show floor, there was clearly a lot of momentum around InfiniBand. So you know, as we start to wrap up the show and people start drifting out the door and you're shaking hands, one thing you start hearing a lot of is see you at supercomputing, see you at Portland. You know, people are starting to think ahead toward the fall. And the last question I had for you, Michael, is as we kind of wrap up out of this and start thinking of the next couple of months ahead, are you starting yet to think of what are some of the things you're hoping to see for the second half of the year and where you'd like to see things developing as we start to approach supercomputing?
Yeah, well, I'm gonna continue to keep my eye on cloud computing because I still think that's a big story. I still think there's going to be lots of movement in that area over the next 6 months and beyond that. So despite, you know, what everybody's saying and talking about, I think there's going to be real end-user stories going on in different ways. So I'm going to continue to follow that. And the GPU story, the accelerator story goes on. And then the petascale story goes on. I think we're going to see a consolidation of petascale machines like we saw here in Europe. I think everybody's going to have, or not everybody, but a lot of vendors are going to have sort of these commodity-based petascale offerings. And there's going to be consolidation where it's just like everybody had terascale offerings over the last 5 years. Now everybody's going to have petascale offerings over the next five, and it's going to be sort of a consolidation phase. Just like it was for the top 500, we sort of stopped at petaflops, and now everybody sort of below the elite supercomputing level is catching up, and we're going to see everybody sort of catching up and being in the petaflop era together. So what are you looking for as we run up to supercomputing in November? What are you seeing or going to keep track of?
Well, you pick three areas. So you pick cloud and GPU and petascale. I'll pick my three. The first one I'll start with is I'll stick with accelerators for a second, but going beyond GPU, I think not enough people are paying attention to what's going on with FPGAs. Sometimes when you're looking for what's the new thing in the market, what you really want to look for is what was going to be the new thing 5 or 10 years ago and it wasn't quite ready and it kind of disappeared and then it's coming back in a different form. And what we're seeing is that happening with FPGAs now, where different HPC vendors in different parts of the ecosystem are starting to bundle FPGAs into their architectures in different ways, whether that's an obvious system play like Convey or whether it's a data management play with a company like BlueArc. I think that's going to be an important thing to watch. And there are other companies out there. There's Extreme Data, obviously, a little company called Kuber that we've been tracking. So you're starting to see these FPGA embedded architectures, and we'll watch what does that mean for Mitrionics and Nalitech and Xilinx and those guys who are actually more on the FPGA chip side. Another one that I'll pick is looking at the data management side, which is my ubiquitous topic that I'm always all over. Is data management has got some of the most critical technology starting to come to market in an area that has a very big impact across real productivity for HPC. Obviously, PNFS is on the horizon, and super
computing might be a little early to see PNFS implementations, maybe one or two in beta. But the other thing that we're starting to see at the show here was I saw a couple of demos of solid-state disks, which might start moving into the data management aspect here. So those are some of the technologies I'm looking at going forward.
Those are good picks. I like those picks, especially for the longer term. But yeah, those are good picks. Maybe 6 months is going to be a little short for some of these, but those are definitely good. I think PNFS is maybe not going to come out in real products until maybe the beginning of next year, maybe into next year. But yeah, I'm watching that space too, and I think that's going to have a huge impact on file management.
And one other thing I forgot to mention, if you'll let me lump the two data management ones into one and give me one bonus one, since you won't claim PNFS for 6 months in, Table Research is going to do a whole study an in-depth study of users application development frameworks. And this is an area of critical development right now as we approach these areas of accelerators, as we keep adding more cores to systems, getting an understanding of the compiler space, the developer tool space, the debugger space, the MPI space, how many of these programmers are really programmers versus content experts, domain content experts. That's going to be another area really worth watching for a lot of development in the second half of the year.
Okay, yeah, very good. Very good. I'll be looking forward to that too.
All right. Well, fortunately, I'm going to talk to you well before we ever get to Portland. We'll return to our regular Friday podcast starting next week. Michael, it's been a pleasure doing these with you here live from Hamburg, and I hope you have safe travels back to California.
Same to you, Addison. It was great doing these, and it's fun being an international correspondent, isn't it?
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Download this podcast every Friday afternoon at www.hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.